Anatomy and Physiology, Gulf Coast State College. Today we're going to discuss the skeletal system, and we are going to appropriately begin with something called the introduction. And I want to start with something that's critically important. In anatomy and physiology, the labs and the lectures are what we call co-requisites. In other words, you're supposed to take them at the same time. And if you're not, you need to tell me as soon as possible, because something's messed up. And you're going to be at a big disadvantage in both courses. Here's why. Let me just tell you something. When us A&P types, you know, the A&P professors, when we get together, we all know each other, and we talk. And when we talk, we don't talk about you guys. We talk about the course. And we know that there's tons of overlap between what you're responsible for in lab and what you're responsible for in lecture. For example, you're going to spend 6 hours in the lab learning the parts of a bazillion different bones. And those are the same pieces and parts you have to know for lecture. But we don't have the time in lecture to repeat it all, plus it'd be boring to repeat it all. So we expect you to bring all that information into the lecture class so that we can talk about more fun stuff, about the function, about the physiology, about how the parts work. I mean, wouldn't you rather talk about joints? I know I'd rather talk about joints rather than rehash everything. And let me talk to you some more about the key in success in lab. Because lab is a different animal. It's not like lecture. I remember years ago when I was a kid, I went to the lecture, I took some notes, I studied them, and I did pretty good on the tests. But lab is different. You must go into lab already knowing the stuff like you studied for a test. You will see that lab time is short and sweet and precious and goes by extremely quickly. So you should use all your resources like the videotapes and so forth and learn it before you go into the lab. You better have seen it and heard it and pronounced it and spelled it at least one time before you show up for lab, or things are not going to work out for you. I know what some of you are thinking. You're thinking, I'm just blowing smoke, right? And you're going to take the first test in lab, and it's just a test on slides, and the slides you'll have at home to study, and then you'll see the same slides pretty much on the test, and you'll ace it, and everything will be good, and you'll say, he wasn't telling me the truth. Well, then comes the bone test, what I like to call the great equalizer. The first true practical examination that many of you have ever taken. And you're going to come in the room and there's going to be bones scattered all over the place in random order. And they're going to be labeled with questions like name that piece, name that part, name that divot, name that bump, name that bone. Is it a right bone? Is it a left bone? And there's no word list, no word bank. You got to have it all in your brain. So if you don't come in that door knowing it 100% stone cold on test day, things are not going to work out for you. So please prepare well ahead of time. Here's how I know kids are in trouble. They go in there on bone day, first bone day, take a bone out of the drawer, and they say, hey, Dr. Gonser, what's this? A fibula, a tibulu. And I'm like, oh man, they didn't study anything. And I just know things are not going to go good from there. As much as I would love to sit down with everybody, really, individually, I could do the whole skeleton from top to bottom and all the muscles from front to back. But that's not the point of lab, number one, nor is there enough time to do that. It would take me 10 hours per student. There's 23 students in the lab. Your job is to focus on your weak points in the lab so we can get around to help everybody. It's not easy either. The analogy I like to make is, you're kind of taking two courses at the same time. It's almost like you're taking an architecture course, but you're taking it in a foreign language, like Greek. So it is difficult, and I understand that. Another thing students try but won't get away with is just studying the two-dimensional pictures at home. It just won't cut it, because in the lab, it's real deal 3D. And the only way you're really going to learn it is hands-on in the lab. You pick up the bones, you twist them, you turn them, you flip them, you flop them. They're different sizes and shapes and colors depending on the lighting and so forth. So you must play with the bones and make maximum use of laboratory time. One of the reasons we do the skeletal system first is because a lot of the basic terminology that you're going to learn is going to help you when you get to other sections. You build upon it, and it makes it easier to learn things like the muscles, like the blood vessels, like the nerves, like the lobes of the brain. And that's why this is such a good starting point. You're going to notice that this PowerPoint I'm using for the video is not the same one you have loaded in the course management system. What I did here was insert a lot of real deal bone photographs because I wanted something that would help you both in the lecture and the lab. But you should print out the stuff that you do have in the course management system in the PDF format so you have all the words, all the drawings off to one side, and then a place to make notes off to the other side. Also, it won't burn up your printer and a lot of ink. Let's bust into our first slide. You should know that the average adult human skeleton has approximately 206 named bones. That's right, we're going to learn a bunch of bones and a bunch of parts on each of the bones. It's divided into two major divisions. The first one is the axial skeleton. The root word axis means lined up in a line, and you should really let your root words help you figure stuff out. Here we see off to your right in the figure from your book, shaded in light blue, are 80 bones arranged around the long axis of the body. That's why they called it the axial skeleton. Next up, the appendicular skeleton. Appendicular refers to the appendages, and that's a big part of this section. So the appendicular skeleton is the stuff sort of in the light tan. This consists of 126 bones, including the extremities. That means the upper and the lower limbs. The appendicular skeleton also includes something called girdles. Girdles are the bones that attach the appendages to the axial skeleton. Notice on my slides, as always, I have these fill in the blanks. They're meant to keep you interactive, engaged, help you maybe spell some words, let you to know what I think might be keywords. Good for homework. Please do the fill in the blanks. And here's a slide we've probably all been waiting for, including me. It's the real deal. It's a human skeleton staring straight at you. And I'm going to use this slide to introduce a lot of the basic terminology that we need before we go any further. Whether you're a surgeon in the operating room, a healthcare provider in the hospital or office setting, or whether you're an anatomy student studying for an examination, we all have to be crystal clear on what we're talking about. We have to be able to communicate precisely, clearly, consistently, and accurately, or else serious problems, injuries, and even death may occur. First off, as the skeleton is standing there looking at you, this is what we call the anatomical position. Shown here as the skeleton standing straight up and down, head and neck straight, torso straight, vertebral column straight, lower extremities stand straight, upper extremities are stretched out with the palms facing forward. This is the anatomical position. More terminology, some directional terms we must know. I'll start up top. The name for above is superior. If you have a superior or a boss at work, they're above you, right? Well, if something is superior to something else in the body, it is above. Let's go down low. The term for below is inferior. If a body part is inferior, it's below something else. Just like in the military, if you have a low rank, you are inferior to somebody who has an advanced rank. More directions. What about off to the side? The terminology there is lateral, like a lateral pass in football. Thank goodness football season coming up. But if you throw a lateral pass, you throw it off to the side. The opposite would be medial. Medial means towards the middle or towards the midline. Then we have the front, the name for the front, which you're looking at now. You're looking at the front of the skeleton in that anatomical position is anterior. Well, some of you might be thinking, I don't care, I'll learn that stuff. So far, that's easy. even my little brother can do that. But let me give you some clinical perspective of why you actually have to know this besides getting an A on my test. Let's say a patient comes to see you and they're in severe pain. They're in the emergency room. You're the triage nurse. And they point to and describe their pain, but it's in layman's terms. You have to put it in correct medical terminology. So maybe you will write on the chart note that the patient, Mrs. Jones, has severe pain in the right inferior lateral abdominopelvic region. Now that's very specific. Every medical provider on the team is going to know what's going on so that the proper diagnostics and the proper treatment will be performed in the proper place so that hopefully no harm will come to the patient. Let's take a look at the flip side, literally. There's the backside of the skeleton in anatomical position. This is called posterior. The posterior surface is the back surface. How do I remember posterior means behind something? Well, when my mom used to put me in time out and told me to sit down on my posterior, that meant to sit down on my backside. That's how I remember the posterior is my backside. On the next slide, you should be able to describe this with the armamentarium that I've just given you. This is a human skeleton standing in the anatomical position, and it is a right lateral view. That's sort of putting things together. Let's go ahead and start to break these things down a little bit more. Let's look at the axial skeleton first. Again, shown in blue, 80 bones running along the longitudinal axis of the body. What do they consist of? Here's the laundry list slide, if you will. Don't get nervous. In future segments, we'll look at these one at a time in order. Start at the top. Of course, we have the skull. Lots of bones up there. And in the lab, probably the largest, most difficult part of the test. So invest a lot of time in the skull. Next comes a bone called the hyoid bone. Really can't see it well here. Better figures coming up. It's a bone in the neck region underneath the mandible. Then we'll look at the vertebral column. Fourth, we'll check out the sternum, which maybe you called the breastbone before today. And finally, the last part of the axial skeleton will be the ribs. We're going to slowly but surely start dissecting away at this list, starting at the top. Yeah, at the top with the skull. That's on the top. And again, please don't get nervous on this slide. This is just an organizational slide. This is a slide for you to come back to later, hopefully to help you summarize things in your mind. It's not meant to blow you away. Just calm down and relax. We will look at these things one at a time, slowly, surely, in this order. So here goes the breakdown on this slide. Over to the left, you should know there are six different cranial bones. Cranial or cranium means brain case in Greek, if you like your root words, which you should. And these do protect the brain. And a lot of the lobes of the brain are named after the bones that are covering them. What's the laundry list? Here we go. First up is the frontal bone. Number two, parietal bones. Three, temporal bones. Four, occipital bone. Five, sphenoid bone. And six, ethmoid bone. Notice that your book also says there's a total of eight cranial bones. Yes, because two of them are in pairs, the ones I put a bold S at the end of bones. There are two parietal bones and two temporal bones. You'll see that clearly on the figures coming up. But for me, what's most important is, you know, there are six different cranial bones. Finally, to end up this introductory slide, you should know, off to the right, there are eight different facial bones. Called facial bones, you guessed it, because they make up the face. What's the list? And calm down again. We're going to break it down later. They include the inferior nasal turbinates, the mandible, the maxillae, zygomatic bones, lacrimal bones, nasal bones, vomer, and palatine bones. Notice I said eight different ones. That's really what's important to me for the facial bones. Your book says there's a total of 14. Yeah, I know that because some of them are paired. The ones that are paired, I put capital S's at the end of the word bones and also at the end of maxillae, A-E, in the root words, that means there's more than one and there are two maxilla. Again, before I end this, please just calm down and relax. This is an introductory slide. In the next segments, we're going to break it down slowly but surely, one at a time, in this order. See you in the next section.